We want this to be very interactive today, and so we want you to feel a part of things and to be able to participate and ask questions.
We don't have to hold hands, do we?
No, you don't have to hold kumbaya.
There will be a kumbaya at 1:35, myself.
That's
in China. Not on your part.
But we're glad to welcome you here to this symposium. Last year, John did a wonderful presentation, and it generated a lot of discussion and a lot of comments afterwards, and that's what led to the creation of this community for social media. And I think if you've listened to any of the main speakers in the meetings this week, the social media has been mentioned a lot as a tool that has plays an increasingly important role in our world today and will only increase. And so we want to give you a chance to learn and become familiar and then also to share your ideas and questions and concerns. And so hopefully we can start that process today. We have two presenters who are going to be working together. They have some information they want to present, and then there will be lots of time for discussion and questions. And so I'm going to turn it over to John Kaminsky and Janice Person, who are going to be doing the presenting today.
Okay, thank you. So I have no idea how many people were going to show up here, and last year we had this talk, and we had a symposium where people gave 12 to 15 minute or 20 minute talks. Janice and I both spoke, and the range of knowledge in the room was like this, right? It was all the way on what is Twitter to can you tell me how I can manage this and do this with Facebook or something else? And I don't know where everybody stands right now. How many people, we'll start with Facebook, how many people have a Facebook account? How many people do not? I like to point you guys out. Okay. All right. Welcome aboard. You will have one after this, maybe. It's not only for personal use. You're going to see how we use it or how some of us have used it for integration with our business and our extension programs. And so the way that Janice and I thought we would start this out is, one, we are definitely open for questions, suggestions, comments throughout the period. We have a lot to get through, but if we don't get through it all, that's okay, too. This is very informal. But what we're going to start out by doing is walking you through the prime points of the various social networks and blogs that are available and how they're being used, and maybe some overview if you don't know about them. Okay, so some of you it's going to be review. Others you might learn something. One thing that I find interesting, no matter who is speaking and talking about social media, I feel like I'm fairly well attuned to what's going on, I always learn something new. I was sitting with Janice earlier today working on this presentation, and she's showing me some of her data, and it's constantly learning. There's always something you can pick up, even if you think you know it all. Okay, so I guess where I thought I'd start out is kind of where we are or were in ag. We're either crops or agronomy here. All right, there's many ways to communicate with your industry, right? And when you think about extension programs, which is really where a lot of this information can be used, if we start going around and thinking about the old school extension, and maybe some of you still do this, I know I do it on some degree, but those one-on-one visits, right? It was always going out and visiting the farmer or going out and visiting, in my case, the golf course superintendent. The way the universities, at least from an academic standpoint, are starting to shift is we don't want to do that. We want to reach as many people as we can without spending as much time, right? So when I produce something, you're hoping that it's going to reach a large audience. One-on-one visits are great, but that's not the way to do it. Okay, we still have organized meetings, right? This is an organized meeting. We still have that. But the meetings industry is definitely, and conferences are definitely on the decline. Every time you go to a meeting, they talk about how difficult it is to make money. They rely on sponsors more. There's a much more stuff available online now. People don't necessarily have to go to your meeting to get the credits. So even this is declining to some degree. Okay, hard copy fact sheets. How many people in here have created a hard copy fact sheet of information? Yeah, I think all of us have at some point if you're in academia. So this was like great, like, oh man, we got these hard copy fact sheets, and then you, and I don't know, maybe you ran them on the printing press back in the day, and then we got a little bit more sophisticated. You know, those turned into, okay, now we have the web, and we can put them up digitally. And so we reach a larger audience at a much less impact economically. So we've kind of progressed to this. Okay, email. Email, which when it came out was kind of the greatest thing, like, oh my gosh, we can communicate instantly, and now it's become the bane of my existence. All right, email to me is like death. I get too many of them. And I used this joke at a talk before. I said, you know, it gets cluttered up with almost like instant messages. So my wife will say, when are you coming home? And I'll say, later. And she'll say, well, what does that mean? And I'll say, 10:30. And she'll say, well, that's too late. I'm making dinner. You have to come. And I'm like, delete, delete, delete. Stop sending me messages via email because it clutters up your box, right? But email is still important. I think for a business standpoint, you have to use it. But it can be a little bit overwhelming. Okay, websites, a huge factor. I think we're getting much more sophisticated with our websites and able to track information a lot better. But there are still a lot of people out there that have not updated to the technology that's available in terms of building a website. Okay, webinars. How many people have participated in webinars? How many people like webinars? Okay, a couple of you. All right, we have these webinars, and we produce them, and you know, you try to make them as professional as possible, and you get them out there, and then you have like 10 people show up, and it's very one-sided. The person presenting is usually the one doing the talking. There's no communication back, or very little communication back. It's a major complaint I hear with the webinars. People don't feel comfortable responding and interacting via that. But still a method, okay? And then we get to social media, all right? What is social media? I don't know, to be honest with you. It's evolving all the time. All right, if you look up social media on Wikipedia, it says, okay, it's the use of web-based and mobile technologies to turn communication into, this is the key point, an interactive dialogue. This is where we're trying to get feedback and have an interaction with people. The days of communicating via fact sheets and hard copies that just go out and you don't know who's reading them and what's going on with them they're not coming to an end, but it's morphing. We want that dialogue and that interaction. We want to see how we're reaching people. And this is what social media has allowed us to do. And then you get to this, all right? And this is a one little tiny thing. If you search social media images on the web, you could probably have something that's about 1,000 times bigger than that. There's like a zillion things out there that becomes overwhelming. And so the purpose of this talk today is to try to break down some of the key social media avenues for you to use and kind of give you some tips and tricks on how that might be useful. Generate some really good discussion here. Hopefully people will speak up and you know, have questions and say what they want to say. And then we're also going to, Janice and I are both going to walk through some case studies in terms of how we've used it and integrated it all together to hopefully reach a broader audience. Okay, so I asked before how many people are on Facebook, and you know, the typical, you're here at a social media talk, so most of you are probably involved in social media to some degree, or you want to be. At golf course meetings, I will speak and I'll ask that, and it's about 80%. In California, I spoke last August, I think, and it was around 50%. So it depends on who you're speaking to in the groups, but a lot of people are on Facebook. And the idea with Facebook is people said, okay, I'm going to create my personal profile. I'm going to put the pictures up with me doing a keg stand from when I was in college. I'm going to, you know, have all these pictures for my friends to see. And then all of a sudden it morphed into we can actually utilize this for business and extension and outreach purposes. And it's becoming an effective communication tool. I don't use Facebook as much as people would think for personal use. I get on there once in a while and do some stuff, but I use it for our Penn State Turf program. I use it for my program in particular. I use it for some other business pages that I have. Okay, so what I thought I would do is kind of give you a little bit of background on the anatomy of Facebook. Okay, I don't think we have a laser pointer, but I have a mouse. Okay, so when you sign up for Facebook, you're generally signing up and creating your profile, which is your personal information. One thing that is against the terms of service of Facebook is to have multiple profiles. You're supposed to be you, okay? But I'm friends with Poa Anua on Facebook, and I'm friends with Creeping Bentgrass on Facebook, and all of these things that are people's profiles. And this is one misconception in terms of the use of Facebook. You think that you have to create a page for Penn State, right? Penn State's turf program, or for Pace Turf, which is a consulting firm. And that's not the case. What you actually do is you create a group or a page, and you can manage multiple pages. All right, so you have your one profile. I'm not going to even talk about that, but that's how you become friends with people. You share information with specific groups. But then we have groups, private or public. I'll get into a little bit of this, but pages is really the area that I want to focus on. And then the final part, I'm not going to get into too much, but there are a lot of applications on Facebook that you can utilize to help you. There's some that are good, some that are bad. When the new Facebook just came out and they relaunched their whole design, Spotify is the name of one of the applications, and it's a music sharing application. So when Larry is listening to music in California, and I'm friends with him on Facebook, it'll pop up and say, Larry's listening to Nine Inch Nails. And I go, Larry, that's a good selection of music you got there. And I can click uncharacteristic, Sinatra maybe, whatever it is. So, but I can then, if I have that application within my profile, I can click on that and I can listen to the same song that he's listening to. So there are some things that are good. I mean, if you like to listen to music, great. There are some things that the applications drive you crazy. Farmville is a good example of it, okay? Which, as an ag people, you might say, no, Farmville's great. But those games, there's a lot of games that are available on Facebook, and those are applications that are integrated into this, that are written programs, okay? I'm not going to get into too much of that because I think that's advanced. But I will talk about Facebook pages because this is really an easy place to start if you want to create information that's shared for business purposes or your extension and outreach purposes. Okay, so here's an example. This is one of the pages that I maintain. Turf Diseases, which you'll hear about a lot today, was a website, essentially, that it was a blog it started out as, that I created in 2009. And we share information about what's happening around the world for all intents and purposes at any given point in time. Okay, and I'm starting with Facebook because that's where a lot of our traffic is, but I'll tell you the morphology of how we got there later in the semester. I'm in teaching mode. Later in the seminar. All right. Wow. Got to go back to the students on Friday. All right. So let's look at the anatomy of the page. All right. We have the page itself. Right. This is everything that you see here, highlighted in blue. And there's a lot of different sections on it. And sometimes, if you're not familiar with Facebook, you get confused. Right. It's a lot of information to process. Okay. First, you have your profile picture. All right. In our case, we created this picture using Photoshop, and it's basically a mushroom that one of my students drew and painted, and that's our picture profile. So you can have it for your company, for your whatever you want, okay? We also have kind of our main heading. This is an area that Facebook has set up, and it will change. They change all the time, which drives people nuts. But this is where you have photos, you have what you're about, okay? We're a community page about golf course management. As the owner of the page, I have some editing information here, edit page. But basically, the pictures show up there. And then you have your wall. Your wall is where you communicate all of this information. Okay? So you see we have feeds that come down here. I posted a message as Turf Diseases, not as John Kaminsky, and said, how many of you have done this to someone else? And it was a video to an irrigation commercial where they were shooting some of the golfers with the irrigation. The guys were laughing. They were programming it in to hit the golfers. And so I shared that information, and if you see down here, we've got 5 comments. Tom Margetz and 6 other people like it. So we have that interaction that we were talking about, which is the premise of social media. Okay? We also have where we post to the wall. One of the nice things about Facebook pages that you don't have access to in your profiles is you can update your status in all of those. You can add photos. You can share links, which is key. The media is good. Share videos if you want. But you can also take polls and ask questions and try to generate feedback. Now, is it scientific? Probably not, but it might give you some good information back. And some of these functions aren't available in a profile page. Most of these, well, the polls aren't available. Okay, then we have this section down here, your left column. I won't get into it too much, but this is where you can edit your information, what you're about. You can see the wall. We also have some apps. In this case, I have an app to a live stream, which is a video sharing website that we have. And if they click on that while we're broadcasting live, it will pop up here with our video conferencing. So without leaving Facebook, you can share a lot of information outside of the web, utilizing these apps. Okay, up here, this is another key point. This is where you have your admins, all right? So you don't have to feel like you're running everything alone. time management is one of the biggest things that, or the biggest question I get. How do you do it all? In this case, we have the five original authors on our Turf Disease blog. I've given them admin rights, which means they can go on as the page itself and post updates and messages. So you're not alone. You can share the responsibility among multiple people. Okay, this is where Facebook tries to get you to advertise. Please, you need an ad, buy one and run it. We actually have run ads just to see what it would be like through Turf Diseases, and it generates a few additional likes, but it wasn't really where we got people to be interested in us. All right, there's also the edit button. This is where you do all of the behind the scenes. Who's allowed to post to my wall? Okay, you can say, I only want people in the United States above the age of 18 to share information on my wall, or whatever it is that you can narrow it down. You can say, I want the whole world to be able to do it. Maybe you don't want them posting pictures. You can get spam on some of these websites, and we're constantly going in and deleting the spam out. It's not a big deal, but you know it shows up. So you can really narrow that down. And then finally, I think this is the last thing. At the top here, this is where you can see notifications. So if somebody does post a message on your wall, you will see that show up in here. Somebody likes you or somebody posts a message. So you don't have to constantly go back to your own wall and filter through it. It notifies you, hey, somebody's conversing with you and you should reply back to them. Remember that interactive feature. Oh, and then recommended pages. These, they try to read what you like. In this case, there's some music, Kings of Leon. I guess that's for me personally. They wanted to recommend it. So there are some other functions in there. Okay, so there's a couple ways of looking at the Facebook pages. One, you can look at it from an administrator side, what you have access to and what you want to post, as well as the user side, what you want them to post or what you want them to get access to. Okay, so the key is from an administrator, you can post links, images, videos, polls to get feedback, and you can also create events. Okay, how many people have created an event in Facebook? Yeah, not many people take advantage of that function, but it's nice. On this website, we've got about 2,000 people that like us. They might not like us, but they follow us anyway. But we've got 2,000 people, which for the turf industry, I feel is fairly successful at this point. All right. So 2,000 people. If I create an event like a conference or this talk or something that we're doing and create an event, I can share that to all of those people. And then they have it hit on their wall, and then other people can see it. So you can see how this kind of exponential growth. If I share it with one person that has 10 friends, and their 10 friends share it with somebody that, you know, they have 10 other friends, it can rapidly reach a large number of people. Okay, so events is another area. Now, page users, this is where you can limit the information of what they are allowed to do, but the default setting is that they can upload images themselves. For turf diseases, this has been tremendous asset to us. We have people uploading images of disease problems they have and say, can somebody tell me what this is? And that goes to the public wall. And although Larry doesn't post as Turf Diseases, Larry Stoll, who runs Pace Turf out in California, he might comment, yeah, I've seen that a bunch, that's dollar spot. So we didn't even have to answer the question, but that person gets an answer back, which is great. Now we're utilizing the people that are on the page to share information. All right? Feedback, you get comments, you get those polls answered, you can respond to events so they can say, yes, I'm going, which will then show up on their wall and tell their friends about it, and they can like or share your information. So this is rapid fire expansion of everything that you post can then, I don't want to call it going viral, but it can then be spread throughout the internet. Okay, so there's some behind the scenes things, and I thought it was important to touch on this. And if I'm boring anybody and you're like, yeah, you know what, we're not there, we don't want, just say go buy it. We can skip through and make this entirely about you. Whatever you want to learn, that's what we're here for. But I don't know where everybody stands right now in terms of Facebook. Okay, so the page settings, there's basic info. All right, if you're a business, this is where you put your office hours. You put, I'm in business, we're open at 9 till 5, Monday through Friday. You put description about what you do. You put your location. This is where you put general information. You also set those permissions I talked about. One of the things that a lot of people will do and most people don't know about is you can actually create a landing page, which means if you type in facebook.com slash pace turf. I keep using Larry as an example because he's up front. If you do that slash pace turf, and it's the first time you visited that page, and you haven't clicked that like button, which we all want those people to click us and say they like us, you can create a custom page that says, you know, some call to action. This is what we do. This is why we're exciting. Click on that like button that's above this message. And so you can create specific pages you want people to land to. And that's important because then it's not just landing to a wall that nobody knows what's going on because there's conversations going. So there's ways that you can be creative with this. You can also change your profanity settings. All right, if you have some people on the wall that like to, you know, drop the F-bomb a lot and they do it by typing it, you can say, you know, my profanity setting must be extremely severe. Don't let any foul language come through. And that's important, especially if you have student pages or things that you're encouraging younger people to be a part of. All right, you can also set your administrators. This is one that I think is highly underutilized, and most people don't take advantage of it. How many people send email via their phone? All right, I do all the time. I take a picture, right, and then I say I need that picture on my computer, so I'm going to email it to myself. You can go into the behind-the-scenes settings, get a unique email address that they set up. It'll be something like a series of random numbers and characters at m.facebook.com. And that is unique to your page. And so if you are a farmer and you're out in the field and see something, you don't have to take a picture with your digital camera, drive 2 hours back home, go to your office, download the picture, upload it to a site, post it on Facebook. You can, in real time, say, here's the picture. I'm sending it to that email address that Facebook told me I have, and as long as it takes to have an email go through, boom, it's on the wall. All right, so you can share information instantly, which is huge, especially for those of you who do a lot of field work and you're out in the field. Okay, you can also link things to, yes.
Is that email address for you and you would give it to them?
No. The email address is unique to your page. Whoever has that email address, if you tell me your email address, I can send images to your page, which is probably not something I would recommend that you give out this email address. You can reset it, I believe, and you can change it. So if you have different administrators that have access to this and they change, or you let somebody go and you don't want them to have access to it, you can reset that email. But it's just a random string that you have, and anything you send to that email address automatically hits your wall. Okay? Do not give that email out unless you want people contributing to your wall. All right, and then there's other things you can do. You can set the permissions of the apps. I talked about Spotify as one where they play music. You could say, no, I don't want that to have access to my wall, or, yeah, I like that service, I'm going to have access to it. And then linking to Twitter. And that's something that Janice is going to talk about specifically, is the use of Twitter and blogs as we move through the presentation. Okay, I'm not going to get into groups too much, although I think that they're very important. And actually, I wasn't going to get into this at all, and Janice pointed something out to me that was really important from the difference between pages, which are public. That is information that's shared with everybody. Okay, you can hide them, but you hide them from everybody. But the purpose of a page is to promote and share information about some public thing. Okay? A group is usually more of a concentrated effort. Okay, you have a group of people, maybe 20 people, maybe 100 people, maybe 2 people. But you can have that be public, or you can actually make it private. Now, I don't use groups that much because I want to promote all of the things. I don't want to discuss things on Facebook in a group. It drives me crazy. It's overwhelming for me. So there's things that I don't like and things that I do like. But Janice made the point that in her experience with farmers and some of the people that get into groups, that there are a lot of people that feel much more comfortable in as a part of a closed group, meaning there are a limited number of people that they know are going to see that, and they're more willing to comment and provide feedback. And again, whatever you can do to encourage that feedback is the purpose of being on social media, I think. It's not about how many followers you have or how many likes. We all have huge egos. We all want the numbers, but it doesn't really tell us anything. It's that interaction that's big. Well, Janice doesn't have a big ego, but I do. Okay, so the groups, so some of the content's the same. You can still post things on your wall. You can still have polls and put images and video up there, but some of the other functions are not available. Okay, one of the nice things that you can do here is you can actually share docs, and what that means is you can click on, you know, create a new doc, and you can type And that information stays there. And the next person can go in and edit it as well. It's like, what was the Google feature that used to... Google Docs? Yeah, okay, Google Docs. And so you can actually edit a document back and forth. So if you have four or five people working on a project all over the country, this may be a way that you think is effective for you. All right? You have to figure out your own use. The one thing I'll say to this is one of the nice features about this is if I post a message on a Facebook page and somebody comments on it, I can't reply back via email to that page. I have to get to a Facebook app and do it from my phone. But on Groups, you can actually respond in line like a discussion chat from your email, which is nice at times, but I'll show you this. Okay, so notifications by email, they come into you if you want them. I don't want them. I don't want all those emails coming to me, but if you prefer that way, then great. And you can reply back. So I said, you know what, that's a really good feature. I should look into that. So I went to one of the groups, one of the few groups that I'm a part of, and I looked at it. And I said, okay, maybe not always advantageous. All right, so you can't see a lot of this, but John Mascaro said, I have a past ballot question, blah, 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 blah. Sammy Collins, I am out of office until Monday, 17 October. If you have queries, please call at, and Sammy, I won't give your number out. Sammy's great. She's in the UK. But again, you know, if you have an automatic reply, then it's going to send it to that reply. And so that might not be advantageous. And then Gary said something, and then Gary Morris said something, and then Sammy said again, I am out of the office, and thanks. So you can see where this would become repetitive and not advantageous. Now, the one way I deal with this is all my accounts that I have through social media are set up through a non-work-related address. So I use a Gmail address to sign up for all these things. And if the email comes to there, I don't ever have out-of-office replies on that. So that takes care of these types of problems. But cycling of information is one of the tricky parts about Facebook and Twitter and the integration. If you're on Facebook and you tell it to go to Twitter, but you tell Twitter separately that you want it to go to Facebook, then all of a sudden you can have this cycle that goes like this where you're just repeating the same message over and over again. And it can get confusing and you will lose all your followers, trust me. Okay, so with that, we'll hold questions on Facebook until we get a little bit further into this, and then save up your questions unless there's anything pressing. But right now, Janice is going to talk about blogging and the use of Twitter, which is always the hot topic. What is Twitter?
So I'm gonna go back a little bit just because John kind of downplayed the Facebook groups, and as he mentioned, I'm a big proponent. And by the way, Janice personally, I work for Monsanto, and I'm a social media person now. So, but what I've found on Facebook groups is if you set up focused groups of people that are working across different geographies and things like that that use Facebook rather routinely, it's a great way to get people notified on things. You can overuse it. If everybody has the emails coming out, they'll either, one, select that the email doesn't come out, or they'll just ignore the group altogether so they don't get any notifications. But for some things, we've found some groups that are really well suited for it. So, I mean, I just encourage you to kind of take a look, because what we've been able to do is occasionally if there's a major incident coming up on ABC News. So let's say tomorrow that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association found out that there was going to be something big on ABC News tonight. They could immediately get in touch with 50 of us around the country and kind of give people a heads up so we would know how to act on it. And that way we can take it back to our offices. That way you don't have to manage all those email addresses for people that tend to change and some of that. So that's the way we've used it a lot. I'm going to talk about blogging. And I know we all look at blogs, but sometimes you don't stop and think, what are blogs really about? In general order, it's about getting information up there in somewhat real time, you know, routine information going up that you're able to share. And it keeps it in a chronological order, but it also lets you organize it in different ways. Of course, people use the word blog in a lot of different ways, sometimes as a as a verb, sometimes as a noun. But what's really interesting is it's really going to take on the personality of either the organization or the people that it's with. So I wanted to show you just a few examples. So if you look at the top one, that's my personal blog. That's what I'm really passionate about. So there's lots of photos and faces, and you know, there's some cotton bowls there with the nice salute to October being Breast Cancer Month and stuff, but that really is a personal kind of thing. Versus on Monsanto's, you can tell it's much more business site. It's hitting kind of the keywords that are important to Monsanto. And then you have sites that are really set up to kind of advocate for specific things. And so one group that I'm involved with, their blog is called Ag Chat, and it's agchat.org. It's a group of farmers who've actually taken time to set up a foundation. And they go around and they do social media training, a lot like what we're doing today. And I'm lucky enough to be on their advisory board. But they use their blog and some of their other channels to communicate a lot of different information from the farmer side. But I wanted to say, you know, sort of why I think people in this crowd ought to be blogging if you're not. You guys have incredibly unique knowledge, insight, things that people in my family would never know existed. I'm serious. I'm a city girl and was not from an ag background. None of my family studied life sciences. So the idea that I know people who run a turf disease blog or something really kind of freaks out my family. But they also come to me because they think, oh, wait, Janice probably knows somebody like that when they have something going on in their lawn, and they know that I could help them figure out how to find it. One of the best explanations, I write a lot about cotton, and my niece is really into the arts, and she started doing some things, and she wanted to take her business. She decided to make it a business thing on the weekends, and so she went out there and she told somebody she was going to look for blogs about how to set up an arts and crafts business and how to be online. And people kind of laughed at her, and they go, well, if people love cotton enough that they blog about it, believe me, somebody has written stuff about this and they can give me pointers. And she found all kinds of information. So it's amazing how many people's first thought is, I don't know how to find it, but I'll go to Google, and Google will help me find it. And that's where a lot of blogs and websites come up. The main difference between a blog and a website is a blog is supposed to be updated frequently. A website is more kind of, I hate to say, stagnant content, but it usually is. You know, a lot of us put a page out there on the website, and it's something that's going to be historical. You know, 3 years from now, we'll look at it and go, God, I should have updated that sometime. With a blog, you have very few things out there usually that are supposed to be forever green, but you have a lot of information coming out at a routine basis, and that's where you really build your expertise. I think a lot of people in here have a need to distribute information on a routine basis. Whether there's a goal to publish a certain amount or something, I'm not sure with you guys, but a lot of us have information that we're generating, and we need to find a way to get it out to people, and blogging is a way to do that and gives you more space than maybe a Facebook or something. It's a really good hub for information. And then I just wanted to put that it is easier than you think. It can be a little intimidating at time, but most of the blogging platforms are set up to be really easy walk-through kind of places. So if you haven't started a blog, how many bloggers are in here, by the way? Okay, well, we have a half a dozen or so. I wanted to put just a few things that I thought, if you're thinking about a blog, these are some of the things that you really ought to take some time with. I mean, quite frankly, and John will hate me for this, I think you ought to talk to a friend who already has a blog, whether it's a colleague at another university or somebody at the USDA nearby or talk to somebody who's already doing it. And has found some way to become successful. You want to think about what you want to accomplish, and that's what I'm putting under conceptualize. So what is your niche? Do you want to do a photo blog? I mean, really, on some of the kinds of things that people communicate, if photos are the primary way that you communicate, maybe you want to set up something that's a little more friendly to photos. Whereas if you're looking more to contribute data and information, you want to make sure you pick up a format that's going to make that easy enough to convey that. So I think you ought to give a few minutes to your blog name. I found it really successful to, once you've decided what you want to communicate and how you want to do it, ask other people. I mean, I've had friends, we've posted it on Facebook or something. I'm starting a blog and I want to talk about these things, but I can't come up with a blog name. And it, you know, like that's one of those stumbling blocks that any of us can get, but if you get some other people to help you out, it comes together. The URL, you want to make something as easy to recall as possible. Even with the free platforms on WordPress and stuff, if you want to buy a specific URL, you can. On Twitter, I became JP Loves Cotton because I wanted to talk to a lot of farmers, and yet I didn't want them to think I knew anything about beef or corn or anything, so I put cotton in there, and my name, I go by JP a lot. It's the way I sign my emails. But so it was easy for me after I was on Twitter. I just made my blog website, jplovescotton.com. And I still use the free version of WordPress. I don't have like a server somewhere that I'm magically in charge of, but I was able to buy that domain, which is easy for other people. I can hand it out quickly. But it also does talk about some of what I'm talking about. It's my blog personally, so it's different things I'm excited about, and cotton's one big part of it. When you look at the platforms, there's a lot of different programs out there and places you can put it. If you don't know much about some of them, I got to tell you, some of those I don't know hardly anything about. WordPress is probably becoming the dominant player out there, and I think that's mainly because they do a lot of things to let you change the look of it. The front is going to look really different depending on who's doing it, but the background is really organized. And what's really good about them, they give you some basic stats, they give you some pointers to help you figure out how people are going to search Google for the information you're writing, and a lot of those kind of things. So I would suggest you at least take a look at WordPress. It may not be right, but you should check it out. Customize is one of the things John was talking about, the nice golf ball looking mushroom. I think you're going to find that across all social media platforms. So if you ever just take a template and leave it the way it is, on WordPress it'll say just another WordPress blog. I mean, people like me, when we look at your blog, it doesn't matter what's written there other than that, almost. You know, like we wouldn't even notice sometimes. But if it says just another WordPress blog, it's kind of a point that you didn't care enough to fix it, you know, to put some information there. And it doesn't help us understand what it's about either. So if you can put some photos up there as your headers, if you have friends that have blogs on the same topics, that's called a blog role. And it's nice to give them little links on the side so they can find other things. And usually a blog, even the setup that comes automatically, gives you an about page, and that's either about you, your department, the university, however you're going to be setting the blog up. This is what the dashboard looks like when I sign in on WordPress. And you can tell over here, it gives you a lot of information right from the start. This is kind of what you call your navigational area, and it'll let me move around between all the different kinds of information up here that WordPress has for me. And I didn't know we had live internet in here, and the wireless has been so bad, so sorry, we're working with screenshots. But even if you wanted to skip all of these kind of things over on the side, you could go down and you could just say you wanted to start a new post, and it's right there clearly. And this is what the two screens look like for if you wanted to add a new post, and you can see it says enter title here. It's really easy. And then the below that you have the editor where you start dropping in your text and you just highlight what you want bold. I mean, it's just as easy as Word. So a lot of it makes it very, very clear cut. One of the things that for some reason the mouse is only half there for me. Up here on this top side, I go in and a lot of times I may only send a title or a few words or a photograph, and I just hit save, and I save that as a draft till I have more time. But at least that way I've captured the idea, because if you're like me, you can come up with ideas when it's not the most fortunate time. And you, if you don't find a way of saving that idea for later, then you get back to the computer and you don't know what to do. Another part that's up there is I love where you can set whether or not it publishes immediately. Or I wrote a blog the other day. I try and write a lot on the weekends for my personal blog and then during the week for business. but I wrote one the other day that's not going to publish until overnight tonight because I'm going to be featured on another blog and they wanted it to kind of go simultaneously. But it's already scheduled, right? So I don't have to do anything overnight tonight to make it go out. What's great is if it was anything that needed to go immediately, I could always go in there and hit, oh, wait, publish now. Or if things were changing, I could decide not to publish it until I had a chance to go back. It lets you tag information over here on the side. And the way a lot of these work, the tags help them move around within WordPress or whatever, and categories help them move around just within your blog. So there's two different things. Most of us think they're kind of the same, I have to admit. But so categories for me are what you personally think people that are reading your blog might be interested in. So in a case with John, it may be a specific set of diseases or things like that on TERF. But in the tag section, that's where I'd put more things that you think people on the internet generally would be looking for. So lawn care and lawn diseases and things like that would be more the kinds of things you'd put in there as quote tags. And most of these platforms actually have a way where you can just get all those nice suggested tags. They figure you can figure out what you're writing about, but then you may not know what other people are searching for. And then all of the services also have a way of giving you the statistics of what's going on. This one, it actually shows you here sort of where people are coming from to read my blog. So whether it's Facebook or Twitter or maybe they're coming from other blogs that have mentioned me or I've commented on. And here it's kind of the top things they're reading at the time. So and you can get this over the week, the month, quarter, the year. If you're a data dude, you can really get a lot of that stuff together. All the stuff on the background, though, just helps you decide what it's going to look like. So if you look at a blog, this is a farmer that I work with quite a bit, and her name is Chris Chin, and she just left it. That's the name of her blog, is Chris Chin. And up here, she put my farm, my family, and my story. And you can see here, it's her family, sort of what they're doing. And then here's where this is like the home section where you'd have your latest post usually is up at the top. And then all of this is where you get into the navigation, helping people really move around your blog, helping people develop a relationship with you. If you look at the way she's got her set up, she's got an archives there by month. And then further down, she has a little category section. But she also, right up there at the top, has a search bar. So that's if somebody expects you're the expert on something, they can come in there and they can put in quickly a couple of words and it just searches through all the content you've provided, sort of like a Google just for your site. And what I love about blogs is you can set these things up and you can get other people just to subscribe to them. So if you're supposed to be communicating within a certain geography or something, tell people when you're doing a presentation, oh, and the latest information from my research comes out on my blog. You can subscribe to it, and you'll get an email directly on it. I also like to provide an option of using an RSS feed. I don't know how many of you use, like, a Google Reader or something to read things. I don't have a problem giving my email address out, but a lot of people don't necessarily like to do that, and an RSS feed is another way to for them to get it sent to them, but you don't have the information on who's getting it. So unless you are really wanting to know exactly who it is, that's another way to extend your reach. When it comes to the blog itself, there's a blog title, and usually when you're looking at blogs, if you click on the blog title, you get a link. That's what you call a permalink. So when you write a blog post, it gives you an opportunity to kind of change that permalink in the background, and that's the page address that you're going to be going to. Don't change it later after you've published it a month later. If you change that address, that means anybody else who's already posted it somewhere, you've just killed off their ability to find it. So you need to do that kind of before you hit publish. But then that's also the way to direct people to that specific area of your blog instead of saying, in general, come to my blog and look at things. You can tell them exactly what the most recent content is. They always have time and date stamps, which I think for a lot of us helps us in terms of, you know, if somebody's looking through your blog and they find something 2 years old, they may want to contact you and see if you have any more recent information. I mean, but it just kind of lets them know on the front end when it was. Most programs allow you to put the tags and the categories down either at the end of the post or at the beginning and provide ways for people to comment. I found so many of these commenting sections allow me to figure out what else people need to know about, both on my personal and my business blog. A lot of times when we post something at Monsanto, you can imagine we get comments that we don't like. There's a lot of people who don't like our business in broad scope. But so on that site, we actually have it so the comments are moderated so that somebody has to take a look at them. But that's kind of unusual. In most blogs, you're able to just let things publish automatically and keep that discussion moving forward. If you have to moderate, I suggest you have somebody that's regularly looking at that, because otherwise you're cutting off the conversation. If somebody's asking you questions right then, they probably don't want to know what you think 2 weeks later. They want to have that instant feedback. That's why they're on the web to begin with instead of at the library. I'm going to go ahead and move right into Twitter. How many folks in the room? Oh, yeah, sir. So the way I do it, and I think it's similar to John, is I use kind of the blog as the hub for most of the information. And then on Facebook, I have it feed to Facebook. And the comment section, if you're posting it to a public page, if they're searching it on Facebook and you have that nice little description explaining what's in the post, they can find it that way, and it'll still bring them back to the blog. But I try and keep the hub of information in one place, because it gets so scattered real quick if you're posting the full information in other places. I think it gets pretty tough. I also will tell you that Google searches really downplay the importance of Facebook, and Facebook's searches really upplay, right? So if you don't do some of that cross connectivity, that's where I think we get the misses. And I think John's got a map of sort of how he does some of that coordination. But yeah, I think you need to keep it in a place where you also clearly own it. You know, in a blog, there's no question about the content. You can put your copyright information. You can put how other people can use it. I use what's called a Creative Commons license. So if somebody else wants to use the content on my blog, they simply have to recognize that it came from my blog. That's, you know, that they can't put it off as if it's their own, but otherwise they have the right to go ahead and do that. Yeah.
Irrigation considerations for a certain time of year or certain diseases at a certain time of year.
Yeah, and really one of the Facebook groups that I mentioned to John was a private group that an agronomist has in my area, and she was nice enough to invite me to be on it. And the discussion I see from growers, so if you have a limited geography or something, you may want to go with a private group, but I think the discussion on Facebook, there's so much of that discussion there where people would rather find you where they already are. So it's kind of back and forth. Okay, we'll go on into Twitter now. Twitter's microblogging. I don't know if how many of you guys are on Twitter besides Daniel? Oh, there's a good number. Awesome. So it lets you use a message of 140 characters, and a lot of us use it for real-time conversations, getting information immediately. It's a way you can also you can find people that have a shared interest. John was a little bit surprised to know that I actually monitor, and Daniel last night, that I monitor who all's using the word Monsanto when they're out on Twitter. I mean, it's just, I don't sit there all day and watch every tweet or something, but occasionally I go and look and see sort of what's going on. And I find people, a lot of people who don't like us, but I also find people who are out there talking about some of the things we're doing in their communities, or they have a question about things that are going on and they forget to mention Monsanto specifically, like put our name in there. So you can do that. And then I love to travel, so I also participate in some travel discussions on Twitter with people that really share that kind of interest, because usually most of my friends would go, really, you're going to Israel? That's insane. But if you go out and you talk to people on Twitter, there's a lot of folks who would encourage you, oh, it's fantastic, you need to go. And I think when we talk about 140 characters, it's important to note that you can also provide links. So it doesn't have to just be what you're saying right that minute. So the Twitter is a fairly low resource demand way to talk to niche audiences. It's kind of interesting because we set up this thing called Ag Chat and thought that, you know, how many people would want to go talk about agriculture. But it's amazing kind of the connections you make, so that when you sit in a room like this or you come to an event like this, you have other people that you get to talk to routinely who are really passionate about the topic. And I think otherwise I'd probably never have met some of the folks that I've come across on Twitter, but they have a real shared passion around something. I mean, there's somebody called the Soils Nerd on Twitter, you know, and so there's lots of people out there that love soils. The other day I was dumb enough to just jump in and ask them if they were coming to this meeting, because I thought, surely they should be here, right? Let me just say, they were humiliated to learn that I was going to a soil science meeting and they weren't able to make it, when I'm just a PR person. but it also allows for outreach and support. So if you want to get out to people that are outside of your normal circle of network and sphere, I think a lot of times what it does is kind of create awareness that you're out there and you're interested in having conversations and dialogue. You know, the first couple of times I talked to John, it probably didn't have much to do about turf. But then I knew who John was, and I knew he knew turf. So later I was able to come back and go, hey, wait a minute. And since he works for Penn State, I've also gone, hey, do you know who in Penn State does this? Which to me is a real benefit as kind of one of the target audiences of the extension service. But for John, it's also making sure that those connections are made in a real way. And a lot of times it's just a source of enthusiasm. This is kind of the screen that it comes up, and it lets you set up, you know, a tweet, put in some information. I don't know how many of you guys use kind of abbreviated web addresses, but Twitter has several of them built in. I use Bitly a lot because I want to know how many people are actually looking at the content I'm sending. And if you use this with a little plus on the end, you could see how many people have actually clicked on the link today to go and check that out. And then the number sign is what you actually call a hashtag. So hashtags are the kind of thing that you can watch. Today I'm watching the ACS meeting. It's open on my iPad, and I've got it open in a separate. I've actually got it open in something called Tweet Chat, because then anytime I want to tweet about the meeting, I don't have to worry about putting that ACS meeting at the end of it, but everybody who's here or interested in the meeting will find it. And people who watch those and actually respond, you could start using turf, or you could start using soils or whatever. Over time, other people pick it up, and they start using it as well when they have a question. It's a great way to share information from some of your other sites if you're doing websites or blogs or YouTubes or something. I think Twitter probably gets its biggest benefit from being in the moment. So people who want to stay up on what's happening now, they turn to Twitter to have conversations with other people who may know about it. And that's whether or not it's some goofy thing that's happened in Hollywood or something like flooding in the Dakotas. I mean, you know, you get somebody in one part of North Dakota that's trying to figure out when the river is going to rise in their area, and they're talking to other farmers to see how close it already is to them. They're not relying just on TV and the Weather Channel to find that out anymore. They know other people that are nearby, and they're really turning to them for their expertise and their information. Part of that then lends itself to the fact that I really think we have a responsibility to make sure some of the people that really have the information is out there. If people are going to be talking about Monsanto or they're going to be talking about science, I feel like those voices ought to be represented, and that's why I think some of you guys really need to be out there if you're not already. This is kind of generally what Twitter would look like when I sign in, and it tells you it's my page by looking up there. This is what you call the home. So when you do that, these are tweets from all the people that I follow and myself are put in here. This is mentions. You can see here in this tweet, he's put Kelvin Ringgold. He's mentioned that. That way it shows up on this mention tabs for Kelvin. You're more likely to catch it, because if it falls in this mainstream only, you're probably never going to get it. Just coincidence. There's also retweets. That's people who thought the information you were sharing is so valuable that they wanted all the people following them to get it. Searches. And then I use list a lot. If you look up over here, you can tell that right now I'm following more than 3,000 people, which is a little insane. And I certainly don't care what all 3,000 people are saying right at this moment. But I have a list just of people who know cotton. So that's, if I'm looking for information on cotton, I go right there. I have a list on researchers and extension. So if I want to know what's happening in your world, that's where I go. I also have a list of media that cover agriculture. Those are the people that I'm most interested in out of the 3,000. There's other people I'm sort of interested in, and, you know, depending on my time, I might have time to sit there, you know, in the airport and kind of flip through. But you're able to really focus in on the people that mean the most to you. It also, Twitter provides you an idea of who else you may want to follow just based on everybody else. This is not an area that I spend much time at all, but this is what everybody in the United States is talking about the most. It's not necessarily the way any of us need to spend our money and time, but occasionally you'll find an agricultural or a scientific theme there, and it's kind of interesting to see what people are thinking about. Then I went to the page for the turfgrass program in Illinois. And this is what it looks like if you go to a page of somebody that you're not following or something. It shows you the same kind of information, how many tweets they've sent, how many people they're following, how many followers they have, and how many people have put them on a list. On the last slide, you can see here, it's what's happening, and it just lets me put in my tweet like the one on no-till I had a minute ago. But when you look at this one, if I write on this in this box, it's going to put a mention for turf research there because it assumes by me being on his page that I want to make sure they see it. And then these are the tweets that they've been sending. So different kinds of information about the events here in San Antonio. One of the things that's pretty interesting to me is it also shows you who in common that you follow. This is actually the soil nerd right there, which is I didn't notice that earlier. But they assume if you're following this turf grass program, then you may want to follow other people who do work in turf grass. So it makes it pretty easy for you to find them. But I'm really one of those people who, I know this is going to kill some of y'all right off the bat, but this organizes my information from Twitter for me. So this is that full feed where every friend who's doing something shows up. This is the mentions. So I don't have to keep looking across different pages to find that out. And these are direct messages that only I can see. I did not come by Monsanto Jet. I came on Southwest Airlines. But it was nice of Sarah. It was nice of her to ask. But when I looked at this tweet, this was somebody I hadn't seen this logo here before. So I just clicked on the name there, and it brought up that it was the Soil Science Group in Raleigh at NC State. And so quick and easy, I get an overview of all their information, and I could just click on the follow page so I can follow them. The same thing happens with hashtags. You can just click on a hashtag, and it'll bring up another column for you, so you can easily follow that all on the same page. And that kind of gets us covered for Twitter. And now I'll turn it over to John. And you're tweeting?
No. Yeah. I was tweeting about your talk, sharing it with the rest of the people that are missing out. Okay, I think that we can get through Google Plus really quickly. We're about an hour in. I know that the session said that we're going to be an hour of discussion. We've got this information, and then we're going to generate some discussion, and then we'll also talk about some case studies. But I did want to mention Google Plus. How many people are on Google Plus? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6. Okay, so this is a new social network. I know you're like, oh, I just learned Facebook, now I got to learn something new. It has some other benefits and some things that you might not like as well. But so basically Google Plus, or written out Google with the plus sign, is a social network and identity service operated by Google. Now one of the nice things about Google is they're trying to make it be that you personally have your account, but you don't sign up as your favorite plant or whatever it may be. You have your identity. That's kind of what the purpose of Google Plus is. Okay? Very similar, I would say, to Facebook. All right, there's a whole wall of information. I'm not going to get into it because I just wanted to expose you to some of the benefits. These are my lists, or in Google they're called circles. And so I have photographers, top photographers. Nikon, I use it for photography, clearly. Photographers in circles, turf grass, my lab people, and this is where all the information shows up, just like Facebook, okay? It's almost identical to Facebook. All right, there's some unique features, though, and this is one of the reasons that Google Plus is gaining such popularity is because of these features. First, it allows you to characterize people into what are known as circles, okay? So I showed you I had a photography circle, a turf grass circle, a friend circle. On Facebook, when I post messages to the wall, it goes to everybody that's friends with me or friends of friends or whatever my settings were. Now, they're slowly adjusting their settings to catch up to this. But what's nice is if I'm talking about turf grass, I know that all my photography people don't care. All right? So I don't want to send it to them. So I can specifically send it out to my circle of turf grass people, and therefore I'm pushing content to the right audience. And so that's a big key for this. That's a big key because you might have agriculture or beef or turf, or whatever your area is, but you might have other interests as well. And people don't want to be burdened. We are in information overload right now with things being pushed out to you. And so that's a benefit of this. The other thing is Sparks. This is another big category they have. Okay, you can search by categories and topics. And this is nice because, first of all, Google is where everybody goes to create their searches. I mean, most people are on Google, maybe Bing to some degree, but Google is it for search. And Google has a very powerful search engine, and that's integrated into the system. One of the reasons that I really like it are these things called Hangouts, and I'll mention that in a bit. But they're essentially kind of like Skype chats, except you can have 10 people in a room. Okay, so I'll show you how we've integrated it later into our turf grass disease blog and how you can actually expand out to more than just 10 people. But to have 10 people, one of our chats, we had 10 people from all over the world, Asia, California, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and we were all sitting there discussing a hot topic. And then we recorded that and we made it available to people later. Okay, so here is what I mean by circles. Okay, Google's very visual. I shared this. I said, okay, circles are a great way to share information with select people. That's the key. You give it to the people you want. I said, here's my list of turf nerds. Okay, it's my turf grass list. And so there's 73 people in this. Well, what that does is if you happen to be one of the people that are on my list and you get this information, I shared it only with my turf people. But everybody I follow in turf, the people that get shared with, they may not follow those other people. And by getting this circle, they can say, I want to view them all and I want to follow them all. If Kaminsky says these turf people are on Google Plus, I want to follow them all. So it makes it easy to connect with people that are in your interest. Okay, Sparks, I'm going to move past this pretty quick, but basically it's categorized searches. You can search everything on Google. You can search only people. You can search anything that's on a Google Plus post. And you can also do what's called a spark. Now, what's nice about the spark is you get all this information from the web that comes in, but what do you do with that if you're on Google? You click on the link and you go get the information, but what if you find all that information useful to you and you want to share it with other people? Well, I guess you can share the link that's about 50 million characters long on a Google search and email it to somebody, but in this case, you can share that information with the specific group that you're investigating about. And the other nice thing is that you can do a save search, which means I have a save search for turf grass, and every time something new comes up, I can click on that search, and it brings me the latest information, which I can then either share or utilize. So there's some things that are pretty good. Okay, so the Google Hangout, I mentioned this already. It's a place to facilitate group video. How many people have ever been in a video chat where you're actually sharing information back and forth? Okay, more than I thought, actually. This is one thing that, and I was intimidated with it as well. I thought everything has to be very formal. When I was going to make a YouTube video, I have to make it very professional, right? Well, we're realizing that that's not necessarily the way things are done. And the way Google explains these hangouts is it's you're sitting out on your front porch having your beverage of choice and neighbors are walking by. And you are sitting there in an open, invited in way, you know, they can come up, right? They say, oh, hey, you know, you're our neighbor. I'm going to come up and say hi. And you're going to sit and you're going to talk to them. And then they may leave and somebody else may come in and somebody else may come in. And you have now four or five people on your porch. And then someone leaves and somebody else comes in. It's this flow of information that is supposed to be creating these open environments that encourage you to just drop into a hangout and see what's going on. And so I've done this. I've done this with completely random people all over the world. You just join in the hangout and say, hey, how are you doing? And it takes the kind of fear out of like, well, I have to be, you know, on my, you know, professional in my tie and coat. And so it allows you to kind of, in a loose atmosphere, utilize these things. And here's, hey, Larry, he's made the picture. Okay, so this is an example. We stream this through what is called Livestream, which is just another website. And this is our Livestream page. But this section here is what you see when you're in a Google Hangout. And so we have, in this case, we have five people. There's me, a couple superintendents, a graduate student that's here, and Larry, who's up here in the front row. And you have a conversation. And you just talk back and forth. Now, one of the nice things about this is Google Plus recognizes, well, they have voice recognition. And so whoever is talking comes up in this big screen. So Larry's talking, he's showing up, then I start talking, and my face pops up, and I'm talking for a while. So it takes out some of the management where you don't have to do as much to run this. Okay, we've also had some technical difficulties with trying to run it, but that happens with anything. All right, so this is where I think that it's very beneficial. And we've been recording these and then posting them back on the web for on-demand viewing. I mean, if you couldn't make the live hangout or couldn't get into the room, 2 weeks from now you can go and listen to what we were talking about. I think that that's pretty good. Janice didn't see that slide. we're supposed to delete that slide. So anyway, those are kind of the social media aspects and kind of the overview of them. I think what maybe we should do now is because we've been here an hour and everybody's kind of like, okay, I knew that, and is maybe open it up to some discussion about how you're utilizing it or questions you may have or...
I'm whether it's about those or other platforms that we didn't, you know, Flickr or YouTube or whatever. There's a bunch of
them.
Go ahead.
I have a question.
Yes.
Google Plus, I may have a video and I pop up. That means the other person has to have a video also, or do they have a fake page that can hear the voice?
If they don't have a video, that's a good question. The question was, what if they don't have a video camera? Well, if you have a microphone, it'll come as your avatar. Whatever your picture is for your profile, that will show up as just a flat picture. And then you can still talk. So you can still interact and talk. It just doesn't have your video. And so when you're talking, your picture of you will show up.
And if it's just not your best day, you can also clip the video off.
That's true.
You're not depressed.
Yeah, or if your internet is painfully slow, like the wireless here, you can shut off the video.
You
said you have like 10 different Facebook pages. Do you use like a Facebook page for individual classes that you teach to try and get students talking with each other? Because one of the things that I would be interested in using social media for in a scholastic environment would be to get a sense of community of the students in the class so that it's not always just me talking to the student or the student talking to me, but to get the students to talk to each other. Do you get much of that with Facebook?
I don't use Facebook for classes because there are issues with being friends with students on Facebook. Some universities, they say, you know, you really shouldn't be interacting with them on these personal sites. I don't think there's any hard and fast law. I'm friends with a lot of my students on Facebook, but I don't use it for that because to me that can become overwhelming. At Penn State, we have a system called Angel that they organize everything. And there's discussion groups and emails and interactions via this system that Penn State pays for.
Like our Husky CT.
Like Husky CT, exactly. But I will say that in Twitter, it's becoming more popular, although it's not quite there yet. And students are interacting and chatting via that.
At Texas Tech, they have several classes that use a specific hashtag. And so when the professor or a student is out there, they may just forward it, put the hashtag on, it just changes. And then that permalink is a thing that quickly Yahoo and Google and stuff, I mean, they all get the title and the permalink if they get nothing else. That helps people find you.
I was going to say that's a good transition into, Janice has some really good information in terms of how you can, if you're trying to drive traffic to your site, right, which is ultimately what everybody wants to do, they want the attention to come to the information they're sharing. Janice has some really good data, and I don't know if you wanted to talk about AgChat or
We weren't sure how many questions and things there would be. Where did that go?
Did I miss it?
Maybe it's after your turf.
I think it is. I think it was.
Wow. Not all media are like, okay, here it is. So on my personal blog, I told you I talk about cotton a lot. So I went through 2 months ago and looked at what search phrases people are using to find my blog, sort of just to look at, you know, how Google and Yahoo actually find me. And if you look at it, it's simple phrases. They're looking for images, and I can tell that by where the pages are getting hits. The same things are used multiple times in the post, in the title, also in kind of any of the captions or categories. Those words are used there. So if you look at how cotton, I started writing a lot more about cotton when my job changed and cotton was no longer my primary part of my job. So on my personal blog, I could write about it a lot more. It's the kind of stuff that I don't have to think about for more than 10 minutes, usually. You know, what does cotton plant look like? I have the whole photo library. It's not that hard. But I started a section, and when John showed you my blog, there's a few different pages up at the top, just like he had on updates and things. One of them is Cotton 101, because everything I write about cotton is pretty basic. So I've been having a goal of an average of one post per week, and you can see in 1 year's time how I went from, like, nobody finding me based on cotton to 400 or so. This is a 2-month period in which I took vacation to Israel. I went, you can see how fast the search hits fall off because I wasn't writing about cotton. And that's the same thing that happens if your blog is just sitting there and not getting updated. So you could establish your expertise on soils or turf or whatever, and then if you go on vacation and you have nobody else updating it, you're going to have a rapid fall from grace. Whereas a website doesn't gain that kind of traction, it doesn't get that kind of momentum that quickly. But it also doesn't fall off that fast. So if you're not going to do regular content. Then the other thing I did, because I teach a lot of these classes on how to blog and stuff, I looked at sort of who I think reads my blog. I have a lot of family, friends, you know, college buddies. And then I have all these great people I work with in agriculture or that I talk to on Twitter. And so for me, when the real power comes when I can get all those audiences together, since Memphis had the flood this year, I was writing about the flood a good bit just because I was posting on my Facebook page. My brother wanted to share it with people that I don't want to see my page. So I started putting it on my blog. And you can see how quickly it went up to thousands of searches in such a short time period. Because I did something frequently, like every day or two, I was posting something else about the flood. Next thing you knew, I came up so high in Google that BBC called me for an interview. So if it's something like a major disease breakout and you're putting information out there frequently, you're going to be driven to the top of that Google list so fast. I mean, really, the BBC should have never found me. There should have been much better qualified people who were just doing blog posts. But at least I was talking to the right people. And I think that was probably what you wanted me to kind of cover. There's another slide that I guess I hid. But just if you looked at that spike over the 1 month period, which we did there, versus like 2 months where people were searching for flood, it went like boom, boom. I'm telling you, it's like the most unique data anomaly. But if I were to write something about Memphis flooding right now, then all that good mojo I have from SEO is stored. It's just quiet right now. But if I started writing about flooding again, I'd pop up really quickly in the hits.
Are you, Larry, worried? I mean, do you try for business? Do you try to look at some of the data to drive traffic? Or do you only worry about the clients that you have?
Well, we're trying to generate. We've got the social networking side.
try to generate more interest and try to keep our side. I'm not sure how successful it is. We haven't been able to really figure out a good way to provide one. That's kind of an interesting thing. Most of our stuff is kind of password protected. Area, I don't get crawled by anything except some information. Nobody really knows what we have behind there.
Yeah, so is it a possibility that you could do an abbreviated version that would be public, kind of like an abstract or something?
Well, because of all the blogging, there's short, 3 to 5 short topics that we put to the video is what we usually do.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're starting to do now is put more videos up on YouTube.
And that actually has to be.
Well, if at the same time, if you took that video and you did a quick embed on a blog somewhere, you're gonna get two hits, and more people tend to comment, I think, on blogs than do on YouTube. You know, they search for things they want to watch on YouTube, but if they want to discuss it more, right now at least, there's some commenting and some, but more tend to be liking or favoriting on YouTube.